The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
Let's go over to the phone line where we've got Kansas Strong Executive Director Warren Martin on the line with us. He's been busy at schools all day today doing the ecumenical oil and gas work, if you will. How you doing today, Mr. Warren Martin?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for coming on the program here today. Let's go ahead and give yourself a little plug in what you guys are doing there for the energy awareness with some of the schools before we get into this Keystone Pipeline leak and some of the things happening in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, Kansas Strong is a nonprofit organization here in Kansas that is dedicated to educating people about the oil and gas industry. Strong stands for Strength Through Reliable Oil and Natural Gas. And basically, we go into schools, we go into clubs, we do events and sponsorships, and all with the goal of helping people understand what it is we do, why we do it, how we do it, and why it's important to them, which is a big part of what people don't understand about our industry is how it impacts them beyond the price at the pump.
And what type of, do you use visual aids? Do you use PowerPoint? What kind of presentation do you bring the kids?
Yeah, I never use PowerPoint. Technology, it fails on you pretty often. And so generally when we go into a classroom, we take core samples, we take rocks, we talk about geology. I do a lot of drawing on the board and kind of map things out for them as we go along. And we try and get some hands-on activities, take in a lot of products that are made from petroleum that they use every day, and talk to them about how we do the refining process to get those products and how those products impact their everyday lives, what they're wearing, what they use, what they're communicating on with their phones and their computers and those types of things. So we kind of make it a hands-on activity that gives them the opportunity to really experience it firsthand, as well as instead of just a lecture.
Very similar to the way that we've done things with the Crude Life. When we go and speak, we've got some Bakken crude oil that was pumped right out of the ground, and that's about 98% refined. You can use it in some diesel apparatuses. And then so we go show the kids the different colors. When you hold it to the light, it's a little bit different than when it's not. And then, of course, the smell of it, boy, you can't escape that smell. It's a very distinct smell for sure. So great work out there in Kansas. Keep it up. And now you're going to help us be educated a little bit here at the Crude Life. So first of all, Washington County, Kansas, that's where the spill happened. Where is that at and what do we know so far?
Yeah, it's about 150 miles or so, 160 miles north of Wichita. And it's where the Keystone Pipeline goes through Kansas, transporting crude from Nebraska down to Cushing, Oklahoma. And we're not exactly sure what caused the breach. They're still investigating that. But we did have a breach there, about 14,000 barrels of oil that spilled. Some of that made its way into Mill Creek, which is a tributary, and was fortunately was contained there before it got to the main river system of any kind. And so it's a serious situation. I've done a couple interviews on this, and people have asked, what's the word you'd use to describe it? And I tell them it's a serious situation, and no one takes it more serious than the oil and gas industry does. We definitely take it very serious. We want to figure out what went wrong, what caused this breach, how do we prevent that from happening in the future. But it's also important to understand that pipelines are the safest way to transport oil. They're safer than trains. They're safer than trucks. They are the absolute safest way to transport oil. And we can't forget that. A lot of times we don't realize that, it's kind of like being an offensive lineman on a football team. The only time that they ever call your name is when you get a flag. And a lot of times, the only time people want to talk about the oil and gas industry and the pipeline industry is when a flag's thrown and a spill happens or is there some kind of malfunction somewhere. Man, they ignore the fact that there are millions and millions of barrels that are being transported through pipelines throughout the United States every single day without incident. So while this is serious, and we definitely take it serious, we can't lose sight of the fact that pipelines are still the safest way to transport oil.
It's interesting, when I got into the oil and gas industry through the media, I guess, about 12 years ago, I saw a lot of similarities between the agriculture industry and the oil and gas industry in the way that, you know, the bottom line was, if you will, because I grew up in agriculture and that was the most deadly industry forever. And you never heard anything about that in the media. And it was kind of like people looked the other way during that. And, you know, because it was, we had to feed the world and all these other things. And I got it, you know, later in life and understood it. And in the same way that the grocery store replaced the farmer, the light switch has replaced the energy worker. And I see almost like where it's these similarities too, where they almost, you know, are people accepting, you know, this accident? Because this is the first accident in Kansas I've heard of in quite some long time. I saw a great quote in one of the papers where a 70-year-old woman said, you know, that's life, I guess, you know, we need oil. So there are some people saying that, but what is, you know, what's happening locally here? You know, because people are waiting for these types of accidents all over the place.
Yeah, I think there's twofold. I think it's hard to get an accurate perception of what has actually happened locally, because social media drives so much of what we do. The media itself drives a lot of what we communicate and how we communicate. And so there's kind of two polar opposites. You got the national media that is piling onto this. They're finding those stories. They're finding those individuals that will give them the quotes that they want to use. They kind of talk about how this is a great tragedy and one more reason why we need to get off of fossil fuels. And so you got that side of the perspective here in Wichita. In this part, you know, I've done several interviews. Their main concern on all of the interviews that I've done up to this point has been, how is this going to impact fuel prices? I think right now people's pocketbooks are talking louder than anything else. And people want to know, is this going to impact my gas prices? Is this going to impact my energy prices? And so the mainline and local media here is, how is this going to impact those energy prices going forward? And so I think that neither one of those really give a true perspective of what is going on with the average consumer here in Kansas, where the average consumer here in Kansas is certainly concerned about the environment in which we live. We're concerned about gas prices. We're concerned about energy prices. But at the same time, we're a rural state. And most of the people here understand that you have accidents, you have mistakes, and they're very rare. And that's why it's making national news. It wouldn't be making national news if this was something that happened on a regular basis. And so I think that there's, you know, depending on what markets you look at as to how this story is being shared, really depends on the story that you're getting. But the facts are pretty clear cut, pretty simple. We had a spill, 14,000 barrels. It's been contained. Over 250 people have been sent into this location to begin the cleanup. Vacuum trucks, booms have been extended across all of the waterways that have controlled it. An earthen dam has been put in place to stop any further mitigation or migration of that oil down the waterways. Allows the water underneath to go on down the waterway, but stops the oil on top of the surface. Vacuum trucks have been sent out to begin cleaning up the process. And what a lot of people don't understand is that there is a full remediation process that takes place where every bit of this oil will be picked up. Any type of soil that has been contaminated will be removed and new soil put back in place. And so there's a full remediation process that takes place. It takes time, but it is a process that can be remediated. It has been contained. And once we figure out and analyze what caused this leak and can put in some guidelines to ensure that a leak like this doesn't happen in the future again, you know, that's a positive for the industry, because we don't look good when stuff like this happens, because it's the only time that people talk about us.
You mentioned the earthen dam. TC Energy is the company. I imagine they were the ones that built that. Is there anything else that the company is doing, I guess, to move things along? I imagine they're working with the EPA and OSHA. I don't know if OSHA is out there, but I imagine the Pipeline Hazard Material Safety Administration, everything else.
Yep, all of those are in place and all of those are working together. TC is at the forefront. They are the ones who built the Eartham Dam. In fact, my understanding is today that they went and added in more booms and reinforced the Eartham Dam because there is rainfall that's expected in the forecast. And so they did all that. In addition to all of that, they're a third-party environmental specialist that are coming in to oversee all the operation, ensure that the remediation is complete and thorough. And so, you know, as far as I can tell from an outsider looking in and looking at what the company's doing and what everybody else is doing, this is a contained situation that is being properly remediated.
What's next for either you or for Kansas or for the oil and gas industry? You know, you were at schools today. I don't know if any of the kids asked questions about this. Actually, when I was speaking down in Oklahoma, I want to say last spring, one of the kids was asking me about coal and natural gas and deer and all this different stuff. So I know kids are, you know, they hear a lot of the climate change narrative in the media, but, you know, being local, did you have any questions like this? What's next? You know, give us an idea of how we can help you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we head off a lot of those questions up front. We start out talking about renewable sources of energy. And, you know, one of the very first questions that I ask students when I walk into a classroom is, how many of you think we're this close, and hold my fingers just a little ways apart, how many of you think we're this close to flipping the switch, getting off of fossil fuels and onto renewable sources of energy? And usually a few kids will raise their hand. And then I'll ask them the second question, how much energy in the world right now do you think is being provided by wind and solar? And most of the time, the answer is somewhere between 50 and 75 to 80% of the world's energy is provided by wind and solar. And then I give them the actual facts that we're in single digits when it comes to energy being provided by wind and solar. In fact, firewood today produces more energy in the world than wind and solar do, as 40% of the population of the world still depends on firewood for the heating of their homes, the cooking of their meals, or both. And we kind of go through that process and how oil and gas currently provides 56% of energy in the world. And, you know, today I was talking with middle school students. I asked one of them how old they were. They told me how old they were. And I said, when you get to be my age, and that's old, right? And the kid was like, yeah, that's old. And I'm like, wrong answer, dude. But I asked him the question. I said, when you get to be my age, at that point in time, the International Energy Administration predicts that at that point in time, still over 50% of energy is going to be provided by oil and natural gas. So when you really begin looking at it and talking with these students, we kind of set up the world perspective and the fact that we really shouldn't be talking about an energy transition right now because there's really no evidence that an energy transition is taking place. Yes, renewables are on the rise. Renewables are growing, but so is energy consumption. And the IEA predicts that by the year 2050, we're going to need 28% more energy than we currently consume. That's a substantial number because last year they were only predicting that we would need 26% more energy by the year 2050 than we're currently consuming. So really we're in a market that's not ready to talk about transition. We're in a market that's really looking at it saying, how in the world are we going to be able to produce 28% more energy by the year 2050 than we do right now? And the only way that's possible is if we utilize every source of energy that we have at our disposal to be able to get to those numbers. And when we kind of set it up like that, we generally have really great questions that talk more about how can we utilize this in a more efficient way. You know, the fastest growing energy sector in the world is energy efficiency. It's growing faster than any of the other energy sources that are out there. And so energy efficiency is going to be a prime topic moving forward, but having appliances, computers, and everything that are more efficient to help us be able to get to that 28% higher energy consumption by the year 2050. And so we kind of set it up from the beginning, talking about those numbers and talking about, the entire world perspective, because it's easy to get locked in, especially here in Kansas, where a majority of the electricity going down the line right now here in Kansas is being produced by wind. And so you look at just Kansas and you think, man, an energy transition is happening majorly in Kansas. But that's not, energy doesn't function on a regional perspective. It's a world market. Oil price is driven by a world market. You know, we can change all we want to, but as long as China is continuing to put in coal plants at the level that they're putting in coal plants right now, we're not making any progress in transition. We're just moving our fossil fuel industry from the United parts of the United States to China and to other parts of the world. And it doesn't matter if the coal plant's here or if the coal plant's in China, it produces the same emissions in either place. And there's only one atmosphere. And so we really need to be having a global conversation about energy when it comes to talking about, is there an energy transition taking place or is there not an energy transition taking place? Is the fact that we're using less oil and gas? The answer is no. We're continuing to grow and we're continuing to utilize more and more. And so when we talk about it in those terms, I think it really gives a real perspective to the students to be able to understand where we're actually at when it comes to energy.
So to kind of recap some of the news notes, we had everything's under control, probably not going to be completely remediated until after the new year. There's really no issue at this point. The water or the earthen dam has kind of stopped the water flow. Now it's just a matter of cleanup and time at this point. Is there anything else, I guess, that people need to know about in any other area?
Well, I think that, there's the two components there. There's the remediation, which definitely is probably going to go into the new year in getting it fully remediated. I think the biggest component right now, the biggest unknown, is what caused this leak and being able to analyze what it was that led to this leak taking place and how quickly then can we get the pipeline back in operation. And I think that's a real question that eventually could begin to impact somewhat impacts our energy costs and our energy prices, oil prices, depending on how long the line has to be shut down. And so I think there's two kind of end dates that are important. One is when does the line come back on and get back into production? And the second, when is remediation going to be complete and the complete cleanup taken care of?
And as of right now, that's actually kind of a good thing. There's no speculation at this point that they're kind of keeping that quiet. Because I did read a few articles and I did not see any speculation or a reason for cause, I suppose, except for maybe some hay rides. That's a popular hayride destination, I read somewhere.
Yeah, up to this point, there has been nothing released about what caused this. It just every time that it's brought up, they say it's an ongoing investigation as to the cause of it. So that's going to be, I think that's an important note that we got to wait for and see what really comes in as to what caused this. Was it a malfunction in the pipeline? Was it, we've had a few pipeline leaks where there was a fault in the production of the pipe that led to the leak. Is that what happened? Or is this a third party incident that caused this? And there's an investigation that's taking place here. And I think we got to wait and see what they come in as. Here's what the cause is before we know the extent to which the company is going to have to go to get the pipeline certified to put back in operation.
Interesting. It never even crossed my mind, foul play. But yeah, with the rise of some of these art projects and some of these protests that are happening, that can't be ruled out. You're right on that. I did.
Well, they haven't indicated that that's even an option, and I don't want to speculate that it is. But what I will reinforce is they have given no indication of anything as to why this has happened. And so when you give no indication as to what led to the leak, that leaves open the doors for everything. And I think we need to wait on that. We need to wait and see what the authorities come back and say, okay, here's what the cause was.
I don't think it's out of line. It's on the lower percentile without a doubt. But, you know, there was a problem in Grand Junction, Colorado last year. There was a problem in Wyoming the year before that. We've had a problem in Montana 3 years before that. So there's enough evidence to at least, you know, say it's on the lower percentage of things. Hopefully that's not the case. But the good news is no drinking water wells were affected and the remediation has happened. So now it's just, hey, let everybody do their business, get the oil back online. And this is just another little hiccup. I do want to say one thing, though, that this spill is not as grandiose and as large as people are making it out to be with the headlines, because in my neck of the woods, the one that we had up here was twice as big as the one you had down in Kansas that's making historic headlines. Boy, those headlines make it seem like you guys just are covered in the BP spill down there. Holy smokes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about with the media. You know, the media, when it comes to oil and gas, we always talk about oil in terms of barrels. We always talk about it in terms of barrels. But you see headlines now that are all over the place that are not talking about this as 14,000 barrels, because that's too small of a number. They're converting that to gallons and making it half a million, you know, just under 600,000 gallons of oil that is out there. And it is the largest spill that has come from the Keystone Pipeline. And, you know, all of those are facts that are there. But the way that you present those facts has made this into a huge story. That really is, you know, it's really a tragedy from the standpoint of keeping a perspective on what's actually happening, what's going down, the fact that we're able to deal with this. Going back to what you said about the drinking wells, you know, one of the things that I definitely want to say that a lot of people don't realize, and it's amazing how many people don't realize this, is a lot of people have this idea that if oil spills out onto the ground, or gets into a waterway, and it mixes in with that water, it mixes in with the ground, seeps down into water wells, and oil does not seep down. Oil seeps up. Oil will continue rising until something impermeable, an impermeable layer of rock stops it. And so when oil hits water, when oil gets into a river system, it stays on top of it, which is why they're able to build an earthen dam that'll stop the oil with a pipe underneath that allows the water that's clean to go on and continue processing through that. Same thing happens on the ground. The oil doesn't seep into the ground. As soon as oil hits water, hits moisture in the ground, it begins rising. And that makes the remediation process more effective and makes it to where we're able to completely clean it up, because it doesn't, like water seeps and continues seeping down, oil goes the other way and it rises anytime it hits that moisture, which makes it easier to clean up than what a lot of people think.
It's a great point about the media trickery there and the headline that says, you know, oil spill in Kansas, no water wells impacted, just doesn't have the same ring as historic flood of all time, you know, that type of thing. So I appreciate you coming on and kind of giving us some facts, boots on the ground, what's happening down there. And what's a website that either, you know, people can find some membership information or stay up to date with what is happening with Kansas Strong?
Yeah, it's real easy, kansasstrong.com. And you can stop by there, see a little bit about what we do, who we are, what we're about. Of course, all my connection links are on there. You're free to connect with me, and I'd love to connect with people. We are basically just an advocate for the industry. This is a resource. Oil and gas is a resource that has created the world in which we live in just about every imaginable way that you can think of. And we definitely need people to understand not just the pitfalls or the downside of the oil and gas industry, but the greater upside of the industry that has created the world in which we live. And that's really what we're about. We're about helping people understand the complexity of the oil and gas industry and how it has created our lives. And so you can find out more about that at kansasstrong.com.